Greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off with the Road to Russia 2018. And the qualifying matches for football's premier event, the World Cup. As I mentioned during Tuesday's Sunny Side of Sports, the road for two-time World Cup champion Argentina got rockier and filled with a few more potholes after the four-match suspension of superstar Lionel Messi. Just hours after the five-time FIFA Player of the Year received the penalty, Argentina lost 2-0 to Bolivia in the high altitude of La Paz to heighten its risk of missing out on Russia 2018. The top four teams in South America win berths at the World Cup next year, and the fifth place team advances to a playoff against a team from Oceania with another berth in Russia on the line. Now, with that loss to the Bolivians, Argentina dropped from third place to fifth, remaining at 22 points with four World Cup qualifiers to play. Argentina's head coach, Edgardo Bauza, says Messi's absence really cost his team, and he had little time to process the penalty. Argentina's Football Association is preparing to appeal FIFA's decision, but as things now stand, Messi will not be able to return until October 10th, when Argentina will host Ecuador in its final match in the 10-team South American qualifying group. FIFA penalized Messi for, in its words, having directed insulting words at an assistant referee during a home qualifier against Chile last week. Speaking of Chile, the two-time Copa America champions beat last-place Venezuela 3-1 in Santiago and climbed back to the fourth spot with 23 points. In more South American qualifying results, five-time World Cup champion Brazil scored a 3-0 victory over visiting Paraguay in Sao Paulo. Coutinho, Neymar, and Marcelo all found the net for the first-place Brazilians, who have won eight matches in a row and are looking very good ahead of Russia 2018. Elsewhere, Colombia posted a 2-0 road victory over Ecuador. It was Colombia's first win in Quito in 20 years. And they're in second place in South American qualifying with 24 points, 9 behind Brazil. In one more result from South America, host Peru beat Uruguay 2-1. Uruguay is in third place with 23 points, while Peru now has 18 points, putting it in seventh position. Meanwhile, U.S. Soccer Federation President Sunil Gulati says the USA's World Cup qualifying campaign appears to be back on track after a one-all draw with host Panama. Seattle Sounders striker Clint Dempsey opened the scoring for the Americans in the 39th minute. It was Dempsey's fourth goal in the USA's past two World Cup qualifiers, and he's now within one goal of Landon Donovan's U.S. record of 57 career goals. That 1-0 lead was short-lived, though, as Gabriel Gomez got the equalizer for Panama about 2 minutes before halftime. Final score from Panama City: Panama 1, USA 1. The Americans are now in fourth place with 4 points in the North America, Central America, and Caribbean region of World Cup qualifying, Panama, well, they're in third place with 5 points. The top three teams in this region earn automatic tickets to Russia, and the fourth-place team goes to an intercontinental playoff. First-place Mexico looks ready to punch an early ticket to Russia 2018. The Mexicans scored a 1-0 road victory over Trinidad and Tobago, with Diego Reyes knocking home the goal on a header. The Mexicans have 10 points to top the six-nation CONCACAF World Cup qualifying table, while Trinidad and Tobago is at the bottom with 3 points. In another result, Honduras and Costa Rica drew 1-1. The Costa Ricans are in second place with 7 points, and Honduras is in fifth place with 4 points. Commenting on the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying, the USA's head coach, Bruce Arena, says, and I quote, "Every team is in there. Mexico has a jump on everyone. It's going to be a battle for the second, third, and fourth spots." I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Keep on sunny side, always on sunny side. Keep on sunny side of life. It'll help us every day. It'll brighten all our ways when we keep on sunny side of life.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Voice of America!
More World Cup football news. FIFA's Senegalese General Secretary, Fatma Samora, says international football's governing body will get rid of local World Cup organizing committees and take full control of tournament organization beginning in 2026. In an interview published Wednesday in the Russian business daily, Vedomosti, Samora said, and I quote, "We will organize the 2026 World Cup on our own," referring to FIFA. Samora adds the current system, which mandates local committees with organizing the World Cups hosted by their countries, will undergo reforms midway between the 2018 and 2022 tournaments. The next two World Cups in Russia and Qatar will not be affected by the changes. Samora says the move is designed to increase control and effectiveness, with local organizing committees having been criticized in the past over delays in infrastructure projects. Fatma Samora also confirmed that FIFA is considering taking over the World Cup ticket program down the road. Now let's go to the U.S. state of Minnesota, where Somali groups are trying to give young people a positive outlet to keep them away from negative influences such as drugs, violence, and extremism. One such effort is a basketball tournament that's bringing together several mosques from the Twin Cities. Abdi Mohammed attended the tournament and spoke with participants. Salem Solomon has the story for us.
Too often, young Somali Americans in Minnesota have made headlines for all the wrong reasons. A small number have fallen prey to the lure of drugs, gangs, and extremist ideology. But youth organizations in the state are trying to challenge all that. A group of 12 youth basketball organizations representing mosques around the Twin Cities held a tournament where young people were given the chance to build athletic skills and gain self-esteem. One of the players from the Ad-Rawda team, representing one of the mosques and won the tournament, explained why it was so important.
Today we have succeeded in winning the cup after beating at the finalist Ummatul Islam Club. We had worked very hard for this and we are so excited about it.
Minnesota is home to the largest Somali community in the U.S., with more than 20,000 living in the state out of a total of 80,000 across the country. According to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, about a dozen people have joined militant groups in Syria in recent years, and about 22 men have been lured to join Al-Shabaab in Somalia dating back to 2007. Most recently, 9 Somali American men were accused of plotting to join ISIS. A Minnesota federal court handed them jail sentences. Programs like the basketball tournament are geared towards providing extracurricular activities to fend off negative influences. A local organization behind the tournament, For the Youth by the Youth, says the impact of the competition is felt far beyond the basketball courts.
The reason we started this program was when we saw what the youth are going through and how they were involved with gang fights among themselves. When we saw how they are suspected or labeled as extremists, we started to bring them together in order to prevent them from getting involved with drugs. We found a place where they can stay fit and stay busy and avoid negative influences.
One of the players, Abdullahi Bare, agrees that sport can be a unifying force for good.
This kind of tournament brings us together as brothers. We come together and we finish the games, we eat together and communicate as well.
The basketball tournament is an annual event in Minnesota that has been going on for 3 years. For Abdi Mahmoud, Salim Salomon, VOA News.
This is Dikeme Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
Dikembe Mutombo played college basketball here in Washington for Georgetown University, where he and another Hall of Fame player, Alonzo Mourning, formed a dynamic duo of shot-blocking big men. Mutombo and Mourning both played in the annual National Collegiate Athletic Association Championship Basketball Tournament, which is the subject of my latest Sunny Side of Sports blog post. Our Voice of America listeners can check it out at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. Once again, that address, blogs.voanews.com/sunny. The blog post is titled, College Basketball's Final Four Features International Big Men, among them Gonzaga center Zemek Karnowski, who is from Poland, and South Carolina power forward Chris Silva, who is from Gabon. Gonzaga will go against South Carolina in the first semifinal, April 1st, at University of Phoenix Stadium in the western U.S. state of Arizona. And in the second semifinal, that same day, well, it features Oregon against North Carolina. The national championship game is Monday night, April 3rd. Meanwhile, the NCAA women's basketball semifinals are Friday night in Dallas, Texas. Top-seeded and undefeated Connecticut will play Mississippi State in one semifinal, and Stanford will take on South Carolina in the other. The women's national championship game is Sunday night, April 2nd, in Dallas. In this Sunny Side of Sports programming note, my special guest on Thursday's show is basketball analyst Len Elmore. Len was an All-American during his playing days at the University of Maryland, and he then went on to a 10-year professional basketball career. And speaking of pro basketball, let's give a Sunny Side of Sports shout out for my beloved and magical Washington Wizards. The Wizards waved their wands and beat the host Los Angeles Lakers Tuesday night, 119-108, to clinch their first division title in 38 years. All-star point guard John Wall led the Wizards with a game-high 34 points to go with 14 assists. He spoke with reporters afterwards about the significance of winning the Southeast Division Championship.
Great accomplishment. Something that has been done a long time, so that's something we could cherish. It's great for Coach to get in his first year. But we have bigger goals and our mindset on bigger things.
One of the goals for John Wall and the Wizards is 50 regular season wins. Right now, the Wizards have 46 victories with 8 games left before the NBA playoffs tip off. A 4-time NBA All-Star, John Wall realizes he's getting more attention from the Sunny Side of Sports and other international media houses because the Wizards have a winning team.
I'm having a career year with numbers, like scoring-wise, but like the way I'm playing, I've been playing like this, I think, the last couple of years. It's just you're winning. I mean, you're winning. You're top of the race for one of the top 3 seeds in the East, and it makes a big difference. Like I always say, you get more recognition when your team's winning. And without the other 14 guys I have, my coaching staff would put me in this position to be great. I wouldn't have the recognition I'm getting.
Speaking of recognition, let's give some recognition to 2 more All-Star guards in the NBA. Stephen Curry of the Golden State Warriors and James Harden of the Houston Rockets. Curry and the Warriors defused Harden and the Rockets Tuesday night by a score of 113-106. Curry fired in 32 points, and he tied a career high with 10 rebounds for the Warriors, who have won 8 in a row, and they also reached 60 wins for the season. James Harden, sporting my favorite beard in basketball, tallied his 20th triple-double of the season, 24 points, 13 assists, and 11 rebounds for the Rockets, who had their 4-game winning streak snapped. In Tuesday night's other NBA results, the Minnesota Timberwolves edged the host Indiana Pacers 115-114. Spanish guard Ricky Rubio made 3 free throws with about 3 seconds left for Minnesota. The Portland Trail Blazers beat the visiting Denver Nuggets 122-113. Yusuf Nurkic had a career-high 32 points and grabbed 16 rebounds for Portland, which acquired the Bosnian big man in a trade with Denver last month. More NBA results. The host Atlanta Hawks snapped a 7-game losing streak with a 95-91 victory over the Phoenix Suns. The Milwaukee Bucks scored a 118-108 road victory over the Charlotte Hornets. The Miami Heat edged the host Detroit Pistons 97-96. And the Philadelphia 76ers beat the host Brooklyn Nets 106-101. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Happy Wednesday, Andrew.
Happy Wednesday to you as well. Halfway through the week.
Halfway through the week. What's trending out there in the sports world?
Well, big news out west here in the U.S. Earlier this week, the National Football League approved the move of the Oakland Raiders team from Oakland, California, right next to San Francisco, to Las Vegas. Now, this is the second sports team being announced in Vegas in recent months after the National Hockey League announced the Golden Knights would be playing there. So a lot of reaction on social media, but we'll start with a comment from Mark Davis, the team owner. Here's what he had to say earlier this week at a press conference announcing the move.
I have mixed feelings, obviously. I love Oakland. I love the fans in Oakland. And I know that there's going to be disappointment and maybe some anger. And I just hope that in the future, as we play in Oakland this year, that they understand that it wasn't the players, it wasn't the coaches that made this decision, but it was me that made it. And if they have anybody to talk to about it, it should be me. And I will, in the coming days, try to explain to them what went into making this difficult decision.
So there's a little bit we can unpack from this statement. Mark Davis says it wasn't the players, it wasn't the coaches, it was me that made this decision. And so that's where you're seeing a lot of the fans' anger directed towards Mark Davis. I think that one tweet that encapsulates the feeling is one that said, Mark Davis isn't a Raider, he's a traitor. A lot of strong feelings from Oakland fans saying it's disgraceful, saying he's putting money before the fans, even video and images of them throwing out merchandise and jerseys, saying they're going to abandon the team. And one big fan weighing in, Derek Carr, who is the Oakland Raiders quarterback, longtime Oakland fan. He was born in California, went to college in California, and he's played only for the Raiders in his 3 years in the NFL. It's the only team he's played for. He released a social media statement saying he's overwhelmed with emotion over the vote. He didn't know how he should feel. He feels pain for the fans in Oakland, but joy for the faces in Las Vegas. And he understands that it's the business side of football. So some sadness and frustration from him, but also understanding. He touched on kind of both sides, and we did see a lot of fans unhappy on social media, the fans in Oakland. But we're seeing a lot of fans in Las Vegas that are thrilled. They're celebrating the vote. There was one video where a bunch of fans were gathered at a bar at 11:30 in the morning to celebrate as this vote went down. But there are other things to unpack from Mark Davis's statement. He said, as we continue to play in Oakland this year, this move, even though it was voted on, won't actually happen for at least two more years. He says that they're not going to move to Las Vegas until 2020. Mm. And there's some question and speculation on social media where the Oakland Raiders might play in the interim. A lot of comparisons, too, about almost like a divorced parents trying to live in the same household, or a relationship that breaks up and you still see your ex over and over again. That's how a lot of fans are feeling, saying that the team is leaving and they know they're leaving, but they're still going to be in Oakland, at least for this season.
And the Raiders certainly have a great history in Oakland, Andrew. I did a little quick research, founded way back in 1960. And so they've been around a long time. They've got a wide following, not just in California, but I think all across the United States.
Across the United States and even in other countries, there were fans saying that there's a big Oakland Raiders fan base in Mexico and other parts of the world. So that might be one option for a place they could play, maybe play some games overseas and test that out for the NFL. Now, the other interesting thing about this is that we talked about the vote. The vote was not unanimous. All the NFL owners had to come together and vote on this to approve it. And the vote was 31-1. Now, the one vote that said, no, I don't want the Oakland Raiders to move, was Miami Dolphins owner Stephen Ross. And he released a statement on social media saying, we have a responsibility to stay in the communities that support us.
Mm.
So you have a very interesting dynamic where a lot of Oakland Raiders fans say, I'm not going to support the Raiders anymore once they move, but I will be supporting the Miami Dolphins because their owners stood up and tried to protect our team. So, you know, they say like politics makes strange bedfellows. I think sports does as well, because you might have a lot of people across the country from Miami, 2,000 miles from Miami, that are going to be rooting for their team. Questions about whether Stephen Ross actually believed this, or knowing that it was going to be overwhelmingly a affirmative vote, decided to cast a no vote. But his actions are getting noticed by the Oakland fans.
Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, we had a tale of two World Cup qualifiers last night. Of course, we talked about Lionel Messi being suspended right before that match against Bolivia. And, of course, Argentina then goes on to lose that match 2-0. A lot of fans very frustrated, very upset. A lot of doubt if Argentina is going to make the World Cup, if they're going to be one of those top four teams in South America to come out of the qualifying. And as you look at their next matches, fans are already trying to analyze the matches against Uruguay, Venezuela, and Peru, hoping beyond hope that their team can get through these matches without Messi, but it's not looking promising for them. Now, the flip side of that, the U.S. men's national team playing last night to a 1-1 draw with Panama, picking up a point. We talked about that hashtag get three. They had to get those 3 points in the win. They did that in San Jose. Now they've got one more point after Panama and another big goal from Clint Dempsey. So a lot of excitement for him on social media.
Great comeback story.
Great comeback story and a lot of excitement about the U.S. chances. I saw one statistic that said it was about a 50-50 shot of making the World Cup after these games and the 4 points. It's now about 82% chance they'll make the World Cup. They still have a few games left that they have to do well in, at least get a draw and preferably for them a win. But they're in a much better position. So as Argentina is kind of falling down and trending downward, Team USA is moving upward. So, as we said, the tale of two qualifiers.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the March 29th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Over the past two decades, much of East Africa has suffered through recurrent droughts resulting in failed crops, dying cattle, and escalating food prices. The result is hunger, undernutrition, and suffering for millions of people. This year, the rains have been scant, more so than usual. This is exacerbating drought in the Horn of Africa, particularly in Somalia, Ethiopia, and Kenya, where around 15 million people are suffering from food insecurity as a result. The Famine Early Warning Systems Network, or FUSENET, which is funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development as well as the Food Security and Nutrition Analysis Unit for Somalia, are sounding the alarm in Somalia. They estimate that half of Somalia's population of 12.3 million people is facing hunger or starvation. The southern agricultural and pastoral areas and northeastern pastoral areas have been hardest hit. Over the past few years, food insecurity has been dropping in Ethiopia. The number of people requiring humanitarian assistance there has declined by half since late 2015. But as last year's October to December rains failed and drought conditions developed in the country's southern and southeastern regions, farmers and herders who had been unable to recover from the previous drought are once again in need of assistance. According to the government of Ethiopia and its relief partners, some 5.6 million people will need relief food assistance between January and December 2017. Kenya is also suffering from inadequate rainfall during both the March to May 2016 long rain season and the October to December short rain season. In some parts of northern Kenya, 70% of water sources are already dry and people are already suffering hunger. FUSENET projected in January that without sustained relief assistance, crisis-level acute food insecurity could occur in some drought-affected areas of Kenya in the coming months. So far this year, the United States government has committed more than $282 million for critical relief interventions in the Horn of Africa. We call on our global partners to join us in this effort.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I am your host, Shaka Sali. Every Wednesday night, Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, 20 million people are suffering from a hunger crisis. An in-depth discussion on the international call for action on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dyke, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.